Good evening and welcome to September. It is Tuesday night, September 1st, 2020, and this is Ozarks at Large on your public radio station, 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. Ahead tonight, Sidney Moncrief starred as a basketball player at the University of Arkansas and with the Milwaukee Bucks in the NBA. His new book, The Grit Factor, concentrates on diversity, equity, and inclusion. He says much of his life, from a childhood in Little Rock forward, helped form the basis for the book. Our conversation ahead this hour. Arkansas's number of new COVID-19 cases did not increase as much during the recent 24-hour period as previous days. The governor announced 273 new cases at his press briefing today. He also announced fewer test results, 3,530. The Department of Health is recording 17 additional deaths, bringing Arkansas's fatality total from the coronavirus to 814. There are just more than 5,000 active cases in the state. Four counties are reporting more than 20 new cases: Pulaski with 44, Benton 29, Sebastian County 24, and Washington County 21 new cases. The governor followed up on a question that was asked at yesterday's briefing about the percentage of Arkansans who have died from the virus who also had underlying conditions. The governor says 94.5% did have conditions, including hypertension, diabetes, and heart disease. The governor says the state is following the CDC guidelines when it comes to reporting COVID-19 deaths.
If COVID is the primary cause of death, or it is a contributing cause of death, then we count it as a COVID-19 death. And that is what we are required to submit for statistical purposes.
Dr. Jose Romero says of the newly recorded deaths, six are delayed from June and July. Five of the deaths are recorded at nursing home facilities, though there are no clusters reported, and one death was reported at a correctional facility. The governor says Arkansas's recovery rate of people hospitalized for the virus is 78.9%. Ivy Pfeffer with the Department of Education says a kindergarten classroom in Rogers is quarantining, as is an entire middle school grade in Mountain View after close contacts with a person diagnosed with the virus. Fort Smith Northside High School was closed today for disinfecting after positive cases connected to the school were diagnosed. A statement from the Fort Smith School District instructed teachers, students, and staff to teach, learn, and work from home today, and all close contacts to people who have tested positive for the disease are advised to quarantine for 14 days. The University of Arkansas reported yesterday 151 new positive cases diagnosed between Friday and Sunday. Dr. Austin Porter with the State Department of Health says the positive cases at the U of A are not immediately reflected in the number of cases reported each day from Washington County.
What we're seeing is that there is a delay in when the cases come from University of Arkansas to when it gets reported to us. So you will see those numbers that are being reported by U of A in future reports, and we'll be relaying that information to the public as we receive it.
Testing on a larger scale, as conducted by the Arkansas Department of Health at the University of Arkansas, began today and continues tomorrow and Thursday. The tests are being administered at Baum Stadium parking lot from 8 in the morning to 2:30 in the afternoon. There will be a testing event on the University of the Ozarks campus in Clarksville Thursday from 3 to 7 p.m. And the governor today set a goal of 180,000 tests to be conducted statewide before the end of September. And several arts venues in northwest Arkansas, in the Arkansas River Valley, as well as across the country, are bathed in red as part of an awareness campaign devoted to the effect the pandemic has had on arts presenters. The Walton Arts Center, the Walmart Amp, George's Majestic Lounge, the Momentary, the Faulkner Performing Arts Center and the University of Arkansas campus, the Fort Smith Convention Center, and Theater Squared are all participating. The effort is to show support for the Restart Act, a bipartisan bill designed to help arts presenters and those employed in the field who have been hit hard by the pandemic and the pandemic's effect on live arts. This is Ozarks at Large. Following the recent police shootings of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, and Jacob Blake just last week, activists have been calling for a defunding of the police to fund other social services. While these events took place in other parts of the country, the city of Fayetteville began working on the design of its new police department headquarters, which was approved by voters in a bond election in 2019. As Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek tells us, local activists have been calling on the city to invest the money elsewhere.
Make sure to maintain social distancing. Keep your mask on as much as you can. Like I said, there is plenty of hand sanitizer. We ask that if somebody does show up and start being antagonistic, to please don't engage them. That's not what we're looking to do here today.
In early August, a group of Fayetteville residents who opposed the construction of a new police department headquarters held a rally at Wilson Park.
I just wanted to say that we're about to get started with the event, and we're going to have a few speakers come up, and then we're going to welcome the community to come up and speak as well.
A woman who asked us to call her Iris organized the event, which had to be moved from its original location at Walker Park because of counter-protesters.
So this is a little bit of a rally, just kind of like the community coming together and trying to let our voice be heard, because they obviously don't hear us. They don't hear the country. They don't hear the world.
Iris says the $37 million committed to the construction of a new Fayetteville police headquarters at the corner of Dean Street and Porter Road could be better spent elsewhere.
What we would like to see the money actually go into is our education system, housing the homeless, and actually getting food security for people that are struggling during this time, during the coronavirus, helping workers with health care, and also helping get child care in order for families and workers to go back to work and actually, thrive.
The defund the police movement, Iris says, is about investing in people's basic needs so they don't commit petty crimes to get by, instead of investing in a system that criminalizes Black, brown, and poor people.
And if Fayetteville were to meet everybody's basic needs, we wouldn't have to live in fear. We wouldn't have to worry about somebody coming to stealing our things out of our car and things like that, because everybody would have their basic needs met, and nobody would go without and need, so much that they have to go steal it from somebody or have to go, do something, petty in order to, get their basic needs met.
And while it might seem like Fayetteville is different from the cities that are making headlines because of police shootings, Iris says the same underlying issues exist here too.
Every Black person I know has that fear, and every Black person I know fears for their life whenever they are encountering a police officer. It goes on everywhere. It's not, just in, Seattle or Portland or, all these other places, It's here in our homes as well, because if there's Black and brown people, there's fear of police.
Residents also showed up to oppose the new police headquarters during a city council visit to the grassy field that will eventually become the city's public safety campus.
So I'm doing my best to answer your questions here, and I know you've got a lot of questions, and believe me, the police department Chief Reynolds is not here today, but he wants to be as transparent as possible. My name is Jamie Fields. You can find me at any time at the Fayetteville Police Department. I'll do my best to answer your questions. The point of today's visit was for the city council members to come out and get a tour of the site itself, just to look at this property. So I'm gonna do my best to answer your questions. But there was not intended to be a public meeting today. It was for them to come out and have the opportunity to look at this property.
The funding for the new public safety campus was approved during a special bond election in April of 2019. The new police department headquarters was one of the 10 items included on the ballot, along with other projects like the Cultural Arts Corridor. The campus will include three buildings to house the police department, a training center, and an indoor firing range, as well as a fourth building that will serve as a fire department substation. During the site visit, City Council member Sonia Gutierrez, who represents Ward 1, responded to the opposition's criticism of the Fayetteville Police Department.
Yeah, and also, I don't think it's fair to assume that our police are unjustly targeting every person of color.
Mm-hmm.
I've been here as a person of color for 30 years, and I've had a very good experience. So I don't think it's fair to assume that because it's police that we're going to have a bad result. And I think that's what I understand on the global climate. We're having that situation. One of my reasons to run for office was so that I could make change from within. And I do believe there's room for change. I don't think working against the police is the way to make the change. I believe working with the police is the best way to do that.
Sergeant Tony Murphy says the new headquarters would replace the current police station, which used to be a retail store until it was taken over by Fayetteville Police in the early 1990s.
This police department that we're in now is 25,000 square feet. And the new campus style will be three different buildings. And I believe the main headquarters building will be around 55,000 square feet.
When the police department moved into its current building, it had 70 staff. Now it has 180, of which 131 are sworn officers. One of the officers who worked there was shot and killed in the station's back parking lot last year.
And that was I won't say an eye-opening experience, because we all knew it was unsecure back there, and that was something that we had worked to remedy, but the location and the structure of this building was just made it impossible to put a fence back there or to secure it any better than it was.
Some of the other issues they're running into, Murphy says, are the intermingling of suspects, sex offenders, and visitors in the lobby, a lack of community space, and inadequate storage. A new campus would solve all those issues, and the 11 acres at the corner of Dean and Porter are some of the few still available near the center of the city.
The square that we're on now, we're right next to the square, that used to be the center of the city, but now the city has grown so much. I think that area, the Dean and Porter area, is pretty much the center of the city. And from there, we can get anywhere. You know, we can hit I-49. Our response times as a police department, our response times are very important. You know, if someone is needing the police, they need them now. And we're always striving to get those response times down. And I think this will help that.
Murphy says the campus will be something the Fayetteville community can be proud of.
We're going to build this police building, and it's going to get built, and it's going to be, you know, kind of a monument to everything we've been through this year. And I think people will get on board with it, and once it's built, they'll realize that it's a great facility that the whole community can enjoy. That, you know, I really don't have a message for the people that are against it, just that it's going to be a good facility, and we'll be more than happy to give them a tour of the facility when it's done. And we look forward to breaking ground and getting that building built.
In a recent Facebook post, Fayetteville Mayor Lionel Jordan wrote he fully supports the police department and Chief Mike Reynolds, and the new police headquarters will be built as promised. Jordan says the police force has needed a new facility since at least 2005, but the city hasn't been able to get it done until last year's special bond election.
I know that there were some folks that was not in favor of the police headquarters building, but it was very few. And that passed by 71% of the voters that voted in that election.
Right now, Jordan says the city is in the design phase of the project, but they plan to have the new headquarters complete in 2022.
If everything goes perfect and, you know, we don't have any bad weather, so it could be more than that. And I don't think it'll be less than that. But, you know, there's a lot more discussion. We're just now really getting started on this building.
Even if the city wanted to reallocate the $37 million approved for the new police station, Jordan says it can't legally be spent on anything else.
It's not legal to take the money from one question and distribute it anywhere else. That money can only be spent on the police headquarters building, and the voters have already decided that.
And Jordan adds, personally, he's never been in support of defunding the police.
I certainly don't mind looking at new police tactics. And also keep this in mind, when they talk about defunding the police, and here's something that's interesting. Of the 25 largest cities that we have in this state, my police force is the second smallest police force in the state.
According to the city's 2020 budget, of Fayetteville's nearly $50 million general fund, 34%, or about $17 million, went to the police department. The second largest expenditure for the city is the fire department, with a budget of about $13.5 million. Sergeant Tony Murphy says there are a number of reasons operating the police department requires that much funding.
I think it's easy to see that the police department employs a lot of employees. We have over 180 employees here at the Fayetteville Police Department, so that will take a chunk of that budget.
The police department also uses patrol cars, which need gas and regular maintenance.
Every officer has to be outfitted with a uniform and gear and a bulletproof vest, and we need training. We want our officers to be the best officers they can be, and that takes training.
And Murphy says police also rely on other specialized and often expensive equipment.
As technology progresses and we see things like drones and stuff like that, those things are made so our job can be done safer, not just for the officer, but the citizens involved also. So there's lots of cost in a police department, but those costs are put to work.
Back at the Defund the Police rally at Wilson Park, organizer Iris says she wants the city to listen and invest in its community instead.
Why are there people living home? Like, why are there so many homeless people on the trails? Why are there so many people like starving and asking for, you know, food and things like that, and jobless and all these things? I was myself was a pregnant, homeless, jobless woman in Fayetteville, you know, and it's the fact that even happened. It shouldn't have happened, you know, like I shouldn't have ever been in that circumstance living in Fayetteville.
And Iris says she knows she's not the only Black or brown person who has been in that kind of situation in Fayetteville.
Fayetteville talks about how progressive it is and how much it's like it's so open and loving to everybody. It has a pride. We have a pride parade and all these things, but, you know, nothing that actually helps the people that we're quote-unquote celebrating.
Last month, the Fayetteville City Council took up a number of votes regarding law enforcement and racial inequality. In one meeting, the council voted to declare racism a public health emergency and declined a grant that would have funded two additional school resource officers in the Fayetteville School District. In another meeting, they approved a grant that funds a regional drug task force. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Susanna Sitek.
The University of Arkansas is planning to spend all of this month examining diversity, inclusion, and equity. Several events, many of them virtual, are scheduled for September, including a series devoted to discussions about books dealing with those very topics. Sessions with some of the authors of the books are scheduled to take place via Zoom later in the fall semester. A schedule of events can be found at diversity.uark.edu. Ahead on today's show, Sidney Moncrief, a former student and star basketball player at the University of Arkansas, discusses his new book about diversity and equity. He says as 2020 unfolded, the book changed, even the title. Our conversation later in our second half hour of today's Ozarks at Large.
The KUAF Giving Tree is making its appearance early this year. Hi, this is Lee Wood, KUAF's general manager. For the past decade, the KUAF Giving Tree has benefited numerous nonprofit entities in the Ozarks during the month of December. But we're unpacking it early this year to benefit our local public school teachers and their students. Many schools, while receiving aid from the state, still do not have enough personal protective equipment that they need. We're asking you to help out. You can drop by the Carver Center for Public Radio at 9 South School in Fayetteville and place your donation of PPE. Masks, wipes, hand sanitizers, and more in the large container in the front parking lot. We will then sanitize all donations before delivering them to schools throughout the KUAF listening area. For more information, KUAF.com.
The Benton County Circuit Court has ruled that the decision about what to do with the Lake Bella Vista Dam rests with the city of Bentonville. Jason Hendren, a local attorney who helped an organization called Friends of Little Sugar Creek with some legal questions, is going to walk us through the decision handed down last week.
Well, here's sort of the shortened version of a very long story. But Little Sugar Creek has been there for, you know, many, 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 many years. And at one point in the distant past, a dam was built that created Lake Bella Vista.
The property where the lake and dam are located was sold and purchased many times over the years, but eventually, Hendren says, it ended up in the hands of Cooper Realty Investments. In 2000, Cooper deeded the property to an organization called the Northwest Arkansas Trailblazers. 5 years later, the Trailblazers entered into a conveyance agreement with the city of Bentonville that was signed by the mayor at that time.
And under the terms of that conveyance agreement, the city was required to maintain the dam and, in the event of its damage or destruction, to repair or replace it.
In 2006, the Trailblazers transferred the property entirely to the city via a special warranty deed, which doesn't mention the conveyance agreement nor any stipulations about maintaining or replacing the dam. Since then, Hendren says, the dam has been significantly damaged in multiple flood events, which created confusion about whether the city was obligated to fix the dam. So last year, the city of Bentonville asked for a judgment to clear up the issue.
Declaratory judgment actions are used to afford relief from uncertainty with respect to the rights and legal relations in connection with a dispute. But that's the way you do it when there are questions or disputes about the rights and responsibilities of parties related to, in this case, a piece of property. That's how you handle it. You go to the court, you lay out the evidence, the facts, and the law to the judge, and then the judge makes a decision based upon the law.
Hendren says both parties raised a number of issues, but the main one in this case is known as the doctrine of merger, which is a legal principle used to handle differences between a contract for the sale of property and the actual deed, which he adds comes up fairly often.
But the law presumes that the whole agreement of the parties is contained within the written deed. And that brings certainty and finality to the terms of the agreement between the parties to the dispute or the property in this case.
Any references to the city being responsible for repairing or replacing the dam were not included in the deed, so Hendren says the judge ruled Bentonville can do whatever it chooses with the dam.
As it stands now, with the decision that's been made, that would allow the city to do with the dam whatever it decides to do. And I'm sure the city council and folks will want to be heard about that, and that decision will be made in due course.
Other stipulations, like maintaining the space for recreation, however, were included in the deed. The Friends of Little Sugar Creek have spent a number of years advocating for the removal of the dam to restore Little Sugar Creek, and Hendren says they're glad to have that issue resolved. This is Ozarks at Large. Sidney Moncrief remains one of the most familiar Razorback athletes in history. He starred in the late 70s and helped the Razorbacks advance to the Final Four for the first time in decades. He was later a perennial All-Star in the NBA with the Milwaukee Bucks and was elected to the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame last year. His post-playing career has included coaching and businesses and writing. This summer, he's released The Grit Factor, a book dedicated to advancing understanding, diversity, and equity. The book is a collection of stories, activities, and concepts to help raise awareness of diversity. Last month, we reached Sidney Moncrief by phone to discuss the book. He says as he was writing in early 2020 and the events of this year unfolded, he rethought some of the book.
The entire title of the book changed, number one. Number two, the format of the book, because I went from just a straight telling a story book or giving information book to a book that included activities, it included illustrations, in addition to confessionals or testimonials from people that had experienced diversity, equity, and inclusion in a positive and a negative way.
How did you measure, because, right, that's important. You can't be completely Pollyannish. You can't be completely negative, I suppose. So how did you internally measure the balance there?
It was a feel. I've lived enough life experiences in a number of different areas to just feel like, okay, this is too heavy in this area. This is not strong enough, maybe in the area of diversity. Maybe this is too light in the area of equity. Maybe it's not, you're not having enough opinions to be heard. So that's where I got more confessionals or testimonials. I wanted the activities to be simple. I wanted a project that people would want to read and open and read it, but not only read it, but have some takeaways that they can apply right away.
You mentioned your life experience, and you've had interesting life experience where you've been a young person around older people, coaches or, you know, parents or things like that. Then as you've aged in your profession and what you do, I'm assuming you have been around a lot of people younger than you, maybe a generation or two younger than you. How has that helped form what we find in the book?
I think the fact that I grew up during a time of the 60s and then 70s where busing started in Little Rock, Arkansas, I grew up through integration in school, which is very positive. Then I went to the University of Arkansas that was mostly white, didn't have a lot of diversity within the college nor within that region of the country. Then I went to Milwaukee that was a melting pot of different ethnicities. Gave me just a different feel for people and how people react to one another. It gave me, I think as I got older, I started understanding the tribal mentality that we kind of have been born with as far as us versus them and people protecting what they feel is theirs and people feel threatened. Fear drives so much of what people do and say in this particular subject. I think all those experiences made me be able to write just something that made sense and that was simple that people can grab hold to.
The words diversity, equity, inclusion are important, but I think that word embracing is also important. How, and this is an impossible question to answer, of course, but how possible do you think it is that we as the big we, as a society, can embrace diversity, equity, and inclusion? And how important is it that most of us do?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And I think it goes back to it's possible and it's essential, and you do it through improving your five components of emotional intelligence. That has to kick in, which would be empathy. You have to learn to have empathy, the three different types of empathy. You should be able to at least get one of the three. You have to definitely have self-management, a little bit of discipline, self-regulation. You have to make sure that you have self-awareness, which is something that we all lack. They did a study to people and asked people if they had self-awareness, and roughly 85% of people in this country say they have self-awareness, yet only 10 to 15% actually does. And it's hard when you're not self-aware to move forward in this diversity, equity, and inclusion fight. And then the discipline, the motivation, and then the last of the five components would be social skills, the ability to communicate, collaborate, and hopefully build relationships with others. All those will come into play absolutely if we're going to move forward with this diversity, equity, and inclusion conversation and make progress.
Yeah, you mentioned self-awareness. Sometimes one of the hardest things is to be aware, to know what we don't know.
Yeah, that's so true. And we talk about the two-sided mirror in a lot of my workshops, to where we have two sides of the mirror, just like in a hotel or maybe at home, where you see we're always going to see ourselves one way, and most people are going to see us a different way, which is the second side of the mirror. And the question is always asked. I ask the question, which side should you pay attention to? Unfortunately, a lot of people only pay attention to the side that they see, and they don't spend enough time of listening to positive feedback from others that can help them become better in certain areas. So that two-sided mirror philosophy is so important based on what you just said, that we not only have a viewpoint of who we think we are and what we stand for, what are we projecting to others? I feel that's equally as important.
I want to ask you about, you again, going to life experience. It strikes me that when you were a very young man, 19, 20, 21, you were perhaps the most well-known person of color in the state of Arkansas, right? Because of your success with the University of Arkansas Razorback basketball team at that time. Do you think that helped form what is in the book and who you are in 2020?
It's so amazing you would say that, because actually what happened between when I was 7 and 8 and 9 up to going to the university helped to form a lot of it, simply because I had so many positive experiences with someone that didn't look like me before I even got to college. And that helped to break down stereotypes that maybe were present within my group, within the African-American community, because I had good experiences. And then I was able to still have good experiences through a number of different areas. And they shaped a lot of what I talked about in the book. And then some of the negative experiences that I've had since I became an adult definitely shaped what I talk about in the book, because this equity and inclusion and diversity issue. It's an economic issue. And that's one area that I think has been definitely not talked about enough, but it needs to be just not only talked about, there needs to be more action in that area.
Right. Discussion's one thing, but you have to have something at the other end of that to actually make a difference.
Yes, yes. I'm action driven. I just believe there's an issue and there's an action that can solve that problem.
Are you an optimistic person?
I'm optimistic that we have more people in this country that are fair-minded, that believe in equity, that want a diverse world. They want people to matter. They want to be inclusive. I just know we have so many more people in this country in the state of Arkansas than we don't have in that area. The only issue is social media can make it seem like we don't. You know, just the way information is spread and the way people can get in there, a group think tank with information from the social media can make it seem that that's not the case. But yes, I'm very optimistic.
More information about the book and so much more can be found at SidneyMoncrief.com. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Kyle. I appreciate it, and you have your best day.
Sidney Moncrief spoke with us last month, and the name of his new book is The Grit Factor. You can find more at SidneyMoncrief.com. The Oklahoma State Department of Health is adding 9 deaths from COVID-19 to that state's virus fatality count this morning. 809 Oklahomans have died from the disease. 7 of the 9 recent deaths are being reported in people aged 65 or older. There are just more than 8,600 active cases in Oklahoma. A fundraising arm of the University of Arkansas Razorbacks, the Razorback Foundation, is starting a move for donations to specifically help with additional costs assumed because of the ongoing pandemic. The One Razorback Fund was launched yesterday. A message at the foundation's website says the canceled spring sports seasons and the reduced attendance regulations for fall sports creates a significant revenue shortfall that's being felt across all sports. The same message says the university's athletic department is one of just a few in the country that is self-sustaining with the help of the privately funded foundation. The SEC men's and women's golf teams will be coming to Northwest Arkansas and to a national television audience next month. The inaugural Blessing Collegiate Invitational, presented by Tyson Foods, will be hosted by Blessing Golf Club in Fayetteville October 5th through the 7th. All 14 Southeastern Conference schools are expected to send women's and men's teams to the tournament. The Golf Channel will provide live coverage each of the 3 days from 3:30 to 6:30 Central Time. The 2020 NCAA spring golf seasons were canceled because of coronavirus. And while many conferences have postponed autumn sports because of the virus, the SEC has not. A press release regarding the just-announced tournament indicates that tournament officials are working closely with University of Arkansas representatives to follow health guidelines. And we now know what time some of the Razorback football games still scheduled for 2020 will kick off. The SEC office announced late this morning that the first game against Georgia in Fayetteville on September 26th will start at 3 o'clock that Saturday afternoon. The next Fayetteville contest against Mississippi will be a daytime game, though the specific start time is still to be decided. It could be as early as 11:30 in the morning, could be as late as 3:30 in the afternoon. The November 7th game against Tennessee in Fayetteville will kick off at 6:30 that night. Remaining Fayetteville home games on November 21st and December 5th have not been assigned kickoff times as of yet.
KUAF is supported by Arcom Plus, serving Northwest Arkansas for over 30 years. Arcom Plus offering printing, binding, graphic design, promotional items, and more. PrintingNWA.com or 444-7711 for more.
This is Ozarks at Large. With me is the Militant Grammarian, and we are continuing to have our social distancing, which means Catherine Sherrills is outside on the sidewalk.
Yep.
I'm inside in the studio. We're all linked up, but far enough away. How are you doing?
Fine, much more pleasant than our first sunny spot.
Yes.
Yeah.
I tried to put us in a picnic table in the front of KUAF and the sun was beating down.
Too much sun. It's one of those hot days.
Yes.
Kyle, a couple of years ago, we talked about synecdoche.
Right.
So I know you remember what that is.
Yes, but again, for our listeners who don't.
It's a word or phrase in which part of something is used to represent the whole. Or a hole is used to represent part of something. For instance, saying I got a new set of wheels, you would know what?
A car.
Yeah. Today we're going to examine another figure of speech that seems similar. The term is Metonymy.
Metonymy.
M-E-T-O-N-Y-M-Y. It uses something more generally or loosely associated with the concept to stand in for it, not necessarily a part of it, but something that we associate
okay,
with it.
Okay.
For instance, when Americans speak of the Oval Office.
I mean the presidency.
Yeah, they're referring to the activity within it or the position. The difference between synecdoche and metonymy is that in metonymy, the word you employ is linked to the concept you're talking about, not actually a part of it, what I just said. Yeah.
Right.
So let's see if you can figure out some of the widely used metonyms.
Okay.
When the British speak of authority and responsibilities of the monarchy, they're likely to refer to it as...
The crown.
Yes. In Julius Caesar, when Shakespeare had Antony ask for everyone's attention, he employed a metonym.
Friends and countrymen?
No, he's asking for attention.
Lend me your ears.
Yeah, lend me your ears. Right. So ears is listen.
Right.
Yeah. Generally, metonymy is used in developing literary symbolism, meaning it gives a more profound meaning to otherwise common ideas or objects. In addition, the use of metonymy helps achieve conciseness. For instance, rifles were guarding the gate is more concise than the guards with rifles in their hands are guarding the gates.
Sure.
Okay, fill in the blank, Kyle.
Okay.
Blank has been releasing very few movies lately.
Hollywood.
Yes,
means
good.
The entire industry.
That's right. Right. That's good. Hollywood is literally a district in Los Angeles, but because it has become linked to movie making, it's a common example of metonymy. The blank. Okay, let's say you're having a major renovation in the room where you cook.
Okay.
And you're telling a friend how the renovation is going. Mm-hmm. The blank is coming along nicely.
Where I cook the kitchen?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So rather than saying the renovation of the kitchen.
I see what you're... Yes, yes, mm-hmm. yes, right.
Yeah.
How's the kitchen coming along? Oh, yeah. It's about done.
Exactly.
Yep.
It can't come or go, but right. as a metonym, it makes sense.
Gotcha.
Because associative and referential thinking are so natural and automatic to us, metonymies can be found and understood frequently in everyday language, literature, and pop culture. Okay, Kyle, let's put you in a much more formal business environment than KUAF.
Mm-hmm.
You have many supervisors, and you have an assignment. You tell me, if we don't get these reports in today, the blank will be after us.
Well, I suppose you could say the suits, and you often hear it, the suits upstairs.
The suits,
right?
Yeah, the suits.
The suits.
Right. Mm-hmm. Meaning the business people.
Right.
Or sometimes the higher-ups, I guess. The people who wear suits every day.
Right. You know, people who work for the sports cable network ESPN, they refer to the suits there as the mothership.
Oh.
We'd like to do that, but the mothership will probably say no.
Oh. Huh. The suits would say no, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, you got your report in, and so now you want to celebrate with a fancy dinner. That fancy fish blank is just what I wanted.
That fancy fish plate?
Plate or dish.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
okay.
Dish rhymes, so.
Right, fish dish.
Okay, here's a hope that many protesters have these days, that their demands will be heard at the center of power. After the protests, maybe blank will listen to the voters.
So this one's a lot like Hollywood, right?
Mm-hmm.
Putting in Washington to represent an entire...
U.S.
government.
Right. Yes, right.
I wonder if in the Walmart world, outside of here, they say that about Bentonville.
Oh.
Like if
we don't think Bentonville will approve that.
Yeah.
Oh, I bet they do.
You know, if you're a Walmart store in Boise, you say,
yeah.
We'll see what Bentonville thinks about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I bet they do. And I bet that's, you know, nationwide, if not worldwide.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's end with some quick fire questions.
Okay.
All using a place, just what we're talking about.
Okay.
To refer to an industry.
Oh, this will be fun.
How do we refer to the tech industry?
Silicon Valley.
Yep. How do we refer to the advertising industry?
Madison Avenue.
Yep. How do we refer to the New York Stock Exchange?
Wall Street.
Yeah. Now you know the difference between synecdoche and metonymy.
Right.
You're ready to win your next bar bet.
when you can go.
Or outside drinking Corral.
There you go. Your aura bat. Thank you. Catherine Sherald is our militant grammarian. This is Ozarks at Large. With me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Sherry Ottaviano, who is the membership director at KUAF. She has a mask on. I have a mask on. We're separated. But we wanted to let people know that we have a winner for September.
We like to come together once a month just to let you know. We thank you very much for your continued support. And during the month of August, everybody who donated was entered into a random drawing. Barbara and Ronald Okamoto from Fayetteville are our lucky winners of a gift certificate to Penguin Ed's Barbecue and a night out at the theater, Malco Theater, a couple of passes.
And we will mail that to them?
Yes, that will go out in the mail to Barbara and Ronald, and we thank you for your continued support and all of our donors.
That's right, and we do this once a month, and you're eligible if you are an active member of your public radio station.
That is correct.
And you know what? There's probably not a better month than September 2020 to make sure you're an active member.
That's exactly right, because this is our fundraising month for KUAF, and sustaining members help us with by contributing on a continued basis, and they raise more than 75% of our funds for us.
And it is 2020, so we'll be taking those at supportkuaf.com, correct?
That's correct.
All right. Thank you so much, Sherry. Hopefully we call your name next month. Thanks, Sherry.
Thank you.
As protests and civil unrest lead to shootings like we saw in Kenosha and Portland, some are concerned about the government's response.
You worry that we're sitting on a tinderbox about to explode because more fuel keeps being added to the fire.
Is the threat of extremism in America on the rise? And is the White House listening? On the next Morning Edition from NPR News.
Morning Edition, tomorrow morning from 5 to 9 on 91.3. This is Ozarks at Large for the first day of September 2020. Thank you for being with us. Historic Cane Hill, in partnership with the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission, is going to host a virtual unveiling of the artwork by artist Clay Connor of Hot Springs that will appear on the 2020-2021 Arkansas Northern Bob White Conservation Stamp. This ties in with a big habitat restoration project that's going on just north of Historic Cane Hill. The event will be live streamed on Historic Cane Hill's Facebook page so people can tune in from anywhere. If you'd like to know more, just go to a search engine and put in Historic Cane Hill. The Fayetteville Public Library is seeking community-created content to be published in a free digital magazine that they are calling Quarantine. Quarantine will showcase projects produced during the pandemic. Fayetteville Public Library looking for original two-dimensional art. That includes personal stories, recipes, comics, photography, drawing, jokes, poetry, and more. The deadline to submit for the first issue is September 30. If you'd like more information, faylib.org. That's faylib.org. And if you are wondering what you can do to help others during the coronavirus pandemic, you could consider a blood donation. Donors to Community Blood Center of the Ozarks provide all of the blood for 11 Northwest Arkansas healthcare facilities. Donation levels remain down, even as hospitals begin to ramp back up their services. It is important that they have enough blood to continue their missions. You can provide the support. You can go to cbco.org to make an appointment, or you can find a drive that's taking place near you. Local donors are giving for local patients. And this is September. It is 91.3 KUAF's fundraising month. When you want to hear important, insightful, and intelligent reporting, you turn to KUAF. When you want to dive into an important issue, you turn to KUAF. And when you want intelligent conversation about a complicated issue, you turn to KUAF. And this fall, we are turning to you. We're raising money during the entire month of September to keep all the important programs you rely on every day on the air. Contributing listeners like you provide more than 75% of our funding. You can be part of the fall fundraiser and make a difference to your public radio station. You can contribute right now in the method that you like and in the amount that you like. Just go to supportkuaf.com. And from everyone at Ozarks at Large and from KUAF and your fellow listeners who already give, thank you very much. And on tomorrow's edition of Ozarks at Large, the University of Arkansas School of Journalism is taking over a COVID-19 data website launched by a Springdale resident earlier this year.
Arkansans have really embraced the platform and trust it and rely on it daily. And so I'm so excited that this team is going to be able to take it so next level.
The future of ArkansasCOVID.com on tomorrow's Ozarks at Large at noon and 7 on 91.3 KUAF. Also at OzarksAtLarge.com. And you can always ask your smart speaker to play Ozarks at Large to hear the most recent edition of our show.
Every day you hear our announcers say, support for KUAF comes from, and then you hear a name of a local business or nonprofit organization. These groups already know the value of the KUAF audience and have chosen to make public radio a part of their marketing mix. My name is Rhonda Dillard, and I'm the underwriting director at KUAF. If you would like to receive more information, please send an email to rhonda@kuaf.com.
This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, and the Illinois River. 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. Timothy Dennis produced our show tonight. Contributors included Zuzana Sitek. Zuzana also gave us news and information about the Lake Bella Vista Dam. Our Milton Grammarian is Catherine Shurlds. Sherry Ottaviano, KUAF's Membership Director, thank you for your help with this evening's show. And our theme is written and performed by Daryl Sean. His most recent CD is titled Safe in Sound. You can find out more about Daryl at his Facebook and Instagram feeds, as well as at darylshawn.com. We'll be back with you tomorrow at noon for a brand new Wednesday edition of Ozarks at Large. And 91.3 KUAF will provide live coverage of the next press briefing with Governor Asa Hutchinson and state officials. That's scheduled for tomorrow afternoon at 1:30. If you miss an edition of Ozarks at Large, you can always listen to us for free if you're a subscriber to our free podcast. The podcasts are available every weekday, and you can subscribe again for free at all the major podcast distributors, including but not limited to Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and more. From the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio at the Carver Center for Public Radio in downtown Fayetteville, I'm Kyle Kellums. Thank you so much for spending a bit of your Tuesday evening with us. We do appreciate it. Please get rest when you can, stay well, and come back. We'll be back with you tomorrow at noon and 7 p.m.